Welcome to everyone on this SAC54 report on domain name registration data model briefing on Friday the 20th of July. If I could please remind everyone that during this call we have Spanish interpretation. Our interpreters are Veronica and Sabrina. If you would be so kind as to state your names when for the interpreters to provide names on the Spanish channel. And also, if you are on the phone bridge as well as on the Adobe Connect room, please be so kind as to mute your computer speakers in order to avoid any interference. And we will let Jim do his presentation, and during the presentation, all lines will be muted and they will be unmuted after the presentation to allow for questions. Thank you very much. Over to you, Julie.
Thank you, Gisela, and good morning, everyone. It's 5 a.m. in Australia and probably some ungodly hours elsewhere in the world. It's Julie Hammer speaking, and I'll be hosting this call. Very warm welcome to Jim Galvin, who is the Deputy Chair of the SAC, and Jim has very kindly agreed to provide a presentation on SAC Report 54, Domain Name Registration Data Model. The SAC is seeking feedback on this report and input from the community on the proposals in the report. So after Jim has done his presentation, there'll be an opportunity for questions and answers, and then I will also look forward to hearing any comments or feedback that the those of you on the call might have, and I'll also be pointing out to you the policy development page where you can provide any feedback in writing. So without any further ado, over to you, Jim. Thank you.
Thank you, Julie, and good morning, good afternoon, good evening to folks around the world here for this call. Let me just do a quick sound check. Am I okay speaking?
Sounds good.
Loud and clear for me, Jim.
Okay, thank you. So I'm going to talk today about SAC's most recent publication here on domain name registration data model. So first most obvious question, of course, is what is it? And what we did in SAC was to try to put together a straw man proposal in hopes of kicking off some discussions in the community about a registration data model. So we took into consideration requirements that we were aware of from GTLD registrar and registry agreements, what we know about escrow agreements, and the ongoing work that hopefully most of you have also seen in internationalized registration data requirements. And we did our best to reach out and gather CCTLD data requirements also. The most important thing to state about this work is that it makes no policy assertions. And that's very important from our point of view. We SAC are presenting this work as a basis for community discussion and a basis for community further study and hopefully agreement. SAC is a technical body, and so we looked at this from the point of view of a technical body and attempted to pull together what we saw in front of us as representing a data model, and ideally we have simply collected what is already in existence and have not added anything to that. The one thing that we did do in collecting this stuff is to create what we believe is a framework for the future of a data model, and I'll say more about that as we go along here. So the reason why this is important is because there does not exist today any kind of uniform data model for domain name registration data. And this missing component of our domain name system has been identified in multiple places, especially over the last few years. Certainly the final report of the Internationalized Registration Data Working Group has noted the lack of a data model. The WHOIS review team draft report has noted the lack of a data model. And ESSAC has reported in a number of its publications over the years the lack of uniformity in data submission, handling, you know, exchange, and access with domain name registration data. I think that this has been most identified and most discussed in an Internationalized Registration Data Working Group, this issue of a lack of structure and extensibility to the data. This is really quite evident when you look at the various ways in which internationalized data in particular has been handled, both in submission and display. You know, you get translation, transliteration issues. All of these things are affected by the lack of a data model. So the way in which we did this was we kind of took a step back and we were trying to figure out what would be the right way to try and organize what it is that would be useful and most helpful to the community. As I already said, we had reached out to collect what is already documented and what is already known and available. So we were not trying to invent anything that did not already exist. However, a lot of discussions over the years have gone on related to a data model and in attempts to harmonize or bring together what various groups have done with respect to data elements. So realizing that different groups would have different needs and different requirements for the data model, what we chose to do was to create what we called a typical life cycle of a domain name. Our idea for a life cycle is to base it on events that occur in the life of a domain name, and we recognize that not all events will occur in all life cycles that might exist. In particular, there are some obvious distinctions between gTLDs and ccTLDs, and of course, in the ccTLDs, there are some obvious distinctions between whether registrars are present or registrars are not present. So all of these things suggest that there is no single uniform life cycle. But if you accept that a life cycle begins when a name is created and it ends when it expires, then you can talk about the life cycle having events. And from there, what we decided was to enumerate data elements that you need to support the life cycle, and we enumerated them by collecting them inside of these events. And the idea is to recognize that to support a particular event, you need certain information. And so the elements that one might have, all elements essentially are optional unless you have that event in your life cycle. If that event exists, then these elements obviously would need to exist in order to support that event. This would allow different groups, in particular gTLDs versus ccTLDs are the most obvious groups, to be able to specify a life cycle that's appropriate for their needs, create policies that would drive those life cycles, and then it would be fairly obvious which elements have to exist. And this is how we created the data model. The data model then becomes defined by whatever you need to support your domain name life cycle in your model of a registry. So taking a look at what a typical life cycle might look like, actually, I went ahead. There is actually supposed to be a picture on this slide, which isn't showing up on my screen. That's not a very big loss. That's really a picture which only has 5 bullets on it. It was intended to very grossly show you what a domain name life cycle might look like. A name is available for registration. It then becomes registered. Thirdly, it expires. Fourthly, there might be a grace period. And then fifth step is it would be released. And then moving forward onto one more slide here, we take one level deeper into what that life cycle would look like. And on this screen, you see a look at some of the parts which might exist in the system of a life cycle of a domain name. So you have a registrant who checks to see if a name is available that may or may not pass through a registrar that passes the query on to the registry. You get back a notice that says it is. The registrant presumably then decides to register the name. The registration is created. And you see on the bottom of the slide an indication of the kinds of information stores, databases, if you will, that then have to be populated in support of the domain name and its lifecycle. So the registry itself is obviously going to have some kind of storage database for the elements that it needs to keep. There are elements that obviously have to go out into the DNS, especially if you're using the name, otherwise the name is not usable. And, of course, there is also the WHOIS record or directory services, as we prefer to call it. You need some information that might be out there that's available for the public or other individuals to query to find out. And again, keeping in mind that we're not trying to make any policy assertions, we're also not trying to be overly prescriptive here. This is just intended to represent some typical components, things that might exist. And so it's a conceptual or functional representation. There's certainly no requirement that there exist three separate databases. You know, there are a variety of implementations of how those things might be combined. So what is the data model? Again, it's an enumeration of data elements. It's a descriptive model. We've tried to be descriptive, drawing on text that already exists. And we've created these data elements. The data model would be comprised of these elements listing all of their attributes and parameters that you need in order to manage that particular element. So these are fairly mundane and obvious things like, you know, the format, the minimum maximum length, any language tags or script tags that might exist, cardinality in the sense that there might be one or more of those particular elements that need to be present. There might be other kinds of parameters, some markup indicators, maybe there's a specialized protocol that one needs for accessing the data. And of course, there's an opportunity for any additional rules that might be specific to the registry, TLD that actually needs to make use of the element. And so the data model should, in theory, the intent is certainly for it to be very flexible so that it can meet the needs of the various groups that would need to make use of it. The specific model here is one data model, but you have multiple profiles. And a profile is something that could be defined by an appropriate context. So a TLD or a registry is going to have a profile, which would be the elements that it needs to have for itself in order to manage the domain name lifecycle. But you can also imagine other profiles that could be more interesting. So, for example, it would be easy once I have a data model and I know what the potential is for the data that might be collected, I could, in a very straightforward way, draw on a profile for escrow purposes. What data would I need if this particular domain name and everything associated with it was going to move from one registry to another or was going to move from one registrar to another? So you can now have profiles to specify escrow requirements by simply choosing the elements. You now know everything that you need to escrow, and you know the format. You know everything that you need to know about that element, and you could escrow all of that too. It makes it much more straightforward to recover it on the other side. You could also imagine creating profiles for domain name registration data, DS, meaning directory services. More typically, we have historically called that WHOIS services. You could have a separate profile for what is actually eligible to be displayed upon a query through a directory service. In fact, you could even potentially imagine having different directory service profiles for, you know, different constituencies that might need them. The option becomes there very credibly and very straightforwardly to do that if you have a single data model. So our specific recommendation is asking all of the SOs and ACs, in particular, registry and registrar stakeholder groups. While during the ICANN PROG meeting, we made a point of meeting with registrars and registries and made the same presentation to them that we are doing here now for the ALAC. to look at this data model and comment on its completeness, and in particular, comment on the utility of the model for furthering the definition of directory services and, of course, domain name registration data in general. Is this framework of a single data model where you have essentially a collection of data elements that you can draw on to create a profile, so this framework that we've proposed for drawing from a data model to a profile, and the profile is simply defined by a context, either a directory service or the registry itself or, you know, whatever other purpose might need access to it. We do highlight, of course, the fact that we recognize gTLDs and ccTLDs are different. At least this slide here says data models, but it's intended to say data elements are different across those two large constituency groups. And it'll be a challenge to try and harmonize them, and in fact, that's why we're not actually trying to propose that one harmonize them. We believe that this framework where we have a standard set of elements, we can all agree on what a contact element might look like. Maybe a contact element has some additional optional parameters, but it's pretty straightforward to say that it's always going to have a name and an address of some sort and other contact information. So you have a standardized, uniform statement of what that element looks like, and then you draw on that element if you need it in your particular registry or your particular directory service or whatever other context, escrow, that you might be using the data element in. And so we're hopeful that this proposal allows the opportunity for progress in this space. Rather than trying to bring the two groups together, give them an opportunity to make use of what it is that they need to make use of. Next steps, of course, would be for the review team's recommendations we would ask for, ICANN to convene a working group to determine the data model to look at this, to actually move forward with this work. And we're asking, in fact, for groups to comment on the whether or not we could propose specifically to move forward with developing a uniform standardized data model within ICANN and use that as a basis for future work in escrow, directory services, and other kinds of things that need access to registration data. So thank you for that, and I'm now available for questions. So back over to you, Julie.
Thanks very much, Jim. Julie Hammer speaking. Can I ask if anyone on the call has questions of the presentation or anything else that might have been in SAC 54 of Jim? I see Olivier has a question. Olivier, please.
Thank you very much, Julie. It's Olivier Crépin-Leblanc for the transcript record. Question to Jim, what's the way forward from here, really?
Yeah.
Is SAC just going to be putting this out for comment, and then afterwards is this model going to be pushed onto the registries and registrars, or how do you go from here?
So thank you, Olivier, for the question. This is Jim again. Ideally, what we would like to see is acceptance by the community of a data model. And so what we're proposing here is a basis for getting to a point where we could accept a data model. Whether or not that needs a joint working group of some sort to actually dig in and, discuss the framework that we're proposing in more detail so that they can get to a model that they would prefer to revise this and check it out in detail, review it in detail. That's part of what we're hoping to get back from the comments. You're asking me, in part, what is the exact path to move forward? I don't know that I have a solid answer for you. I think that in part we're hoping to see what the groups, how they would like to proceed. Most notably the CCNSO and GNSO, of course. But we'd like for them to tell us, you know, what they would propose and how to move forward in accepting this. So if you have a suggestion in what you think is the best way forward with this data model, we'd certainly welcome that idea. So we have a goal in mind, but waiting for comments before deciding what the best path is to get there. Thank you.
Olivia, did you have anything further to add?
Thank you, Julie. No, I'll let others ask a few questions, and then I'll come back on this. Thanks.
Thank you. Julie Hammer for the transcript record. Yandia, I'm sorry if the pronunciation is wrong. You have a question to ask?
Yes, I have a question. It's Jean-Gier. I can recall also, Jean-Gier is January in English. Okay, thank you. My question is, it's a very simple question. I want to know, who do you mean, thank you, Jim, for your presentation. Who do you mean by the community? Who does the community refer to? Is it the regional internet registry? Which community is it exactly? This is my first question. Thank you.
So, thank you for your question. This is Jim again for the transcript. The community which we think is most relevant to the question is obviously registries and registrars. So that most directly affects the CCNSO and the GNSO. But from our perspective, from ESSAC's perspective, we're not at all trying to be exclusionary. And in fact, it's one of the reasons for being here now. We certainly want to give everyone the opportunity to comment. And if you think that you know, you have a role to play in participating in any future work, depending on what we decide is a recommended path going forward, we'd certainly like to hear that. And you know, I can't imagine any reason why we would exclude anyone. We are focusing efforts on GNSO and CCNSO, but that's only because that seems obvious. It's not at all intended to suggest that no one else could participate. If they believe that they have something to contribute, then we would certainly welcome that participation. Thank you.
Julie Hammer here. Jean-Jé, do you have anything further you wish to ask? No, okay. I noticed that there is a question in the chat room from Yalvi asking where are located the three databases on the pictures.
So, Jim again, I presume that he's referring to the what's labeled Who Is DNS and Registry Database on the slide in the domain name lifecycle. And that really is an implementation-specific question. The point that the slide was simply trying to make is just functionally, you know, those databases exist. They might all be the same database. They might be separate databases. It's fairly straightforward to suggest that, you know, a registry database is going to exist on the backside of an EPP server, assuming one uses EPP for your protocol to communicate with registrars or registrants if you don't have registrars around. You know, the DNS database is probably separate because it would exist as part of your DNS infrastructure. But not necessarily. Again, it's an implementation question. Different registries will do different things. And again, with the Whois database, a similar kind of thing. It just depends on how you are providing the directory service that you're providing to the community at large. You might draw that information out of your registry database if the registry is providing it. If you have a thin registry, then obviously registrars are going to have part of that database. and they're going to have the information, and so it will be distributed. So in any case, the slide is not intended to be prescriptive about where these things do or don't appear. It was representative of the fact that those databases need to exist in some form and in some place as part of a domain name lifecycle in order for the name to be useful. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Yoli, do you have anything? Oh, you've said okay, thanks, in the chat room. Okay, Julie Hammer again. I noticed another question in the chat room from Alejandro DeSanti. Have you or will you, ESAC, engage in analyzing use cases to refine the profile? Jim.
So thank you for the question. This is Jim again. ESAC is available to engage with groups that would like us to do that. Actually, in giving the presentation to the registrar community during the ICANN Prague meeting, we were asked a similar question about our role in the development of any policies that would drive the profiles. And the way that I responded was to say that, you know, we are offering to continue this work and to work with others to continue the work. We've done our part in collecting what we believe is existing information and creating something out of that. At this point, to move it forward, we recognize that we need the direct engagement of others. And in fact, what we'd really prefer is for those groups to progress this work because it really is most relevant for them. But we're also offering and prepared to engage with them in any way that they are comfortable or would like to take advantage of any technical advice that we could offer to them. We're happy to do that. Thank you.
Julie Hammer again. I see Olivia Crepin.
Yes, thank you, Julie. It's Olivier Crepin-Leblanc for the transcript. I have another question for you, Jim. With regards to the process leading to SAC 54 being drafted, was SAC asked to draft such a model, or how did it come to the conclusion that something needed to be drafted in this fashion?
So thank you for the question. Let me respond in two parts. First, just briefly a little bit about ESAC and how it conducts its work. ESAC takes requests and inputs for work items from a variety of sources. We might be directed by the board to answer a question. We might also be asked by any other body within ICANN to ask a question. And so we have gotten formal requests from other bodies. I don't believe we've ever gotten one from ALAC, but certainly the other groups have asked us to answer questions and provide comments. In addition, we allow ourselves technical advice on the security and stability of the name and number system. You know, we have a number of people, obviously, the majority of the committee who are, you know, senior technologists in a variety of places in the domain name industry and in related industries. And ESAC members are always welcome to bring work items forward and suggest things that ESAC should take a look at. And then the committee as a whole, you know, agrees that it's an item worth working on. And then what ESAC does is whenever once we take an input item and the committee as a whole has reviewed those and decided on actions it wants to take, we would create a work party, so a subgroup of all those on the committee, to move some work along and draft whatever the work product will be. And then the entire committee gets an opportunity to review that and approve of it before it's published as an ESAC document. So the second response then is in this particular case, this was partly drawn out of what we knew was happening in various WHOIS dialogues. Partly out of an individual person in ESAC who simply put forth that this was an area which we could contribute materially to the overall WHOIS dialogue. And so we chose to take on this work item and to present this to the community as a basis of future work. Thank you.
Julie Hammer here. Olivia, any further follow-up?
Thank you, Julie. It's Olivia for the transcript. Yeah, speaking solely for myself, my own experience in the overall ICANN space is that whenever something starts costing to implement, there is significant pushback from those people who ultimately will have to put hand in pocket. I have been part of some working groups where there were thoughts about adding fields to the WHOIS records, for example. Something as simple as adding one field to the WHOIS record, and there was an outright no from some parties who said this would absolutely make a mess of their systems and it would cost them money and they would only do it if this was all paid for by ICANN, et cetera, et cetera. I personally very much like the work that the SAC is doing, and certainly SAC 54 is something. I'm always for having things to be tightened and have a standard that everyone can use, and you end up with less anarchy in the way data is handled. But the concern I have is with regards to the costs of the operation, it being the case that you might face significant pushback from some members of the community, and that's to be expected. As far as ALAC is concerned, I'm not sure if anybody is going to pay for this, but I gather you probably are in a much friendlier ground than that. That's the comment I just wanted to make. Thank you.
Thank you, Olivier. So, Jim, again, I'll add the following comment to that. In an ideal world, this document actually doesn't propose anything that doesn't already exist. So in an ideal world, there would be no cost. This document is more about appropriately labeling and structuring what we all already do. Having said that, though, one of the things that's interesting here is there is a little bit of cost that is likely to happen. To the extent that we agree that this is an appropriate data model, then you obviously want to define that in some technical form. The usual natural thing is you create an XML document, you know, that defines all your data elements and what they look like. And in fact, that is one of the examples that's in the SAC 54. And what's interesting is once you do that, you have to migrate. Then if you have implementation, you might need to migrate to XML solution. So you want your queries to go out in XML. You want your responses to come back to you in an XML document. Now, there might be some costs associated with that conversion, or if you know you want to choose a different kind of basis and not use XML and use other things, there might be some costs associated with that conversion in being able to handle those queries. The interesting thing, though, is that's a one-time cost, and once you're done with that, then you know changes, additions, removals to the information are handled much more straightforwardly, and there's no ongoing cost. So to a first order, just accepting that this is a data model and it properly represents what you want, it doesn't have to change any implementation to anything. But obviously, ultimately, down the road, to get benefits out of this data model, there has to be some level of conversion, and there's time and opportunity to figure out exactly what that would be and what kind of shape it would take. That's my comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Julie Hammer here. We have two questions in the chat room. The first is from Jean-Jay Ngoulet, a question to Jim. Should not there be a recommendation asking the manager of the DNS servers and even the developers of operating system server, brackets, Linux, Unix, Windows Server, Mac, OS, etc., close brackets, to incorporate this new terminology in the DNS database by default during the implementation of their system. Jim.
So thank you for the question. It's not immediately obvious to me that we're proposing any new DNS terminology that would need to get folded back into those systems. It would help me if you had a particular suggestion, or did you have something specific in mind that you wanted me to speak to? For the purposes of this, we haven't even tried to give new names to data elements. We drew on data element names that already existed in existing documentation. So it would help me to answer the question if you had a particular example in mind of something that you want me to respond to. That's one piece of the response. The other piece of the response is when you talk about operating systems and such and DNS servers, most of them are not directly a part of the ICANN community. DNS server providers, to some extent, are, but the community is not in an organized way. Just, you know, those who do it incidental to other services they provide that are part of the domain name industry, you know, are present here. So, you know, there's a little bit of a process gap in terms of how ICANN would engage those communities. And I just put that out there as an observation. I don't have an answer for how one would close that gap. Thank you.
Julie Hammer here. Jean-Jacques, do you have anything you wish to add following Jim's reply? I'll assume that was no, but I'll keep a lookout in the chat room. Julie Hammer again. The next question in the chat room is from Yaovi Atahun. Please, is this report available in other languages? I'm not sure who would like to answer that.
I can answer the question. It's not now. You know, ESSAC does not by default translate all of its reports, but many of our reports have actually been translated. We simply have to put in a request for that to happen. If folks would like to see it in another language, I think that would be something which ALAC could actually ask of ESSAC. Certainly the staff could certainly communicate back with each other. I know that Julie Hedlund is on our call, and so I'm sure if the ALAC staff would communicate back with Julie, we could certainly take that request, and then we could seek to have that done in whatever languages are interesting, if you only had a specific set you wanted, or we could also reach out for the complete standard set that that ICANN normally does. Shorter answer is please just make that request, and we'll see what we can do.
Thanks, Jim. Julie Hammer here. A question to staff as a follow-up to that. What would be the best way to find out whether there is demand for other languages for this report? Would it be as comments on the policy development page where we have short feedback, or would you prefer people to send their request to you directly? Can I ask staff what is the best approach there, please?
This is Julie Hedlund. I don't know if there is an ALAC staff person on this call, but I would recommend that what I'll do is I'll just get in touch with an ALAC staff person and have them tell me what is the best way for them to make a query of the ALAC as far as the language, the interest in language translation.
Julie Hammer here. Yes, Julie, there's several ALAC staff members on the call, so perhaps Heidi or Isla or Natalie could give us some advice.
Hi, this is Matt. I'd be happy to help you answer the question, but I actually stepped out of the office for a second. Can you please repeat it?
Hi, Matt. Julie Hammer here. The question is, if various members of the ALAC community would like to see this report in other languages so that we can progress the request for translation, what would be the best approach for them to ask for this? Would it be for individuals to contact ALAC staff directly, or should we ask for them to put this request onto the policy development page that you've already created for us, Matt?
I think the best way to move forward would be to contact us directly. I have a copy of the report, so I'm happy to look into that.
Thanks, Matt. Julie Hammer here. So, Matt, I wonder if you might add to the policy development page a note advising people to send a request directly to you should they have a need for the report in another language. Would that be the way to go about that?
Yes, if anybody would require it, to send a general email to staff, and we'd be happy to look into that possibility.
Yes, Julie Hammer again. Yes, I guess, Matt, what I was asking was, would you mind amending the policy development page to advise people of that?
Sure, I'll make a note. Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you. Olivia, I see you have another comment, and there are a couple more questions in the chat room, so I'll go to you first, Olivia.
Thank you very much, Julie. It's Olivia Clapin-Adlon for the transcript. Just following up on this translation part, I think that there is an important thing here in that you've mentioned the SAC, or Jim has mentioned the SAC documents are not translated, or at least this one is not. If none of them are, I think it would be worth, and that's already looking at your agenda item number 4, it would be worth putting in our statement that we wish these documents to be translated in the, at least in French and in Spanish, and if not actually in more than that, in the UN languages, as part of ICANN's wider internationalization and, the whole thing about languages and so on. These reports are particularly important, and the SAC's work is I would believe, of a high enough caliber for those to be worth translating. Definitely has my vote on this. And you will notice that several of our community members are also really pushing on this, and it might be for the ALAC to ask for that and request this formally. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So,
thank you, Olivia. And Jim, go ahead.
Yes, please. Thank you, Jim. Just a quick comment for clarity. Olivia, you said that SAC reports are not translated. Just to clarify what I had said before, many of our reports are, in fact, translated and into the standard set of UN languages that ICANN does for its reports. What we don't do is translate by default everything that we do. It's not clear that most things have that broad or general applicability, and so we're usually waiting for some indication that that's a need and that that's what folks would like. I mean, as I'm sure you're aware, there is a certain cost associated with the translation, so we just try to be a little judicious in its use. Having said that, we'd certainly welcome a request from ALAC to translate either this report or, if you'd like to see, really, all of the other reports translated, happy to take on that request, too, and then we'll see what we can do. So thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Julie Hammer here. I note in the chat room that Pascal Bacono has asked, I would like to know if this work also tends to harmonize CCTLD and GTLD registration models, or it will be for the future. Jim.
So actually, we do not intend for registration models to harmonize at all. For the purposes of this data model and the framework that we're proposing, we don't believe that's necessary. We're expressly trying to propose something that allows different registries to, in fact, have different profiles. The purpose of the data model is more about if you need an element, you should look here to see if an element is already defined that meets your needs, that meets the kind of data that you want to store. And if it is, you should use what's here. If it's not, then we extend the data model to include your element, and then your profile has your element in it. So it's one standardized, uniform data model with all potential elements defined, and then a given registry would simply create a profile that uses the element that it needs, and it would use one of the standard elements. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Julie Hammer here. Natalia Enciso, sorry, Natalia, if that's wrong, has in the chat room a question. A profile for the service could be shared between a set of registries. How is data protection taken into account in this situation? Jim.
So this is Jim. Speaking personally, I can only observe that data protection is not discussed in our document. And I'll offer that I would think that data protection is something that would be addressed by the policy that drives the profile. In principle, you know, speaking for myself, just as a technologist, I think that there's plenty of room for different services to share a profile and for them to have, you know, different models about what data in that profile is actually accessible under what circumstances. I would expect that to be driven by the policy for that registry rather than the profile. So in any case, STAC 54 does not address that because that we think that that problem and the answer to that question is at a different level than the data model. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Julie Hammer again. I note in the chat room that there are a few further comments about language translation, and Olivier has made a comment that perhaps we should mention that we would like to see all SAC reports to be translated, and I will certainly include that comment in our feedback to the SAC. But I'm sure Jim has taken that on board already. So I'm just going to... Now, Avery has asked, but will the data model include elements suited to providing privacy control?
1 minute remains.
So thank you, Avery. Excellent question. The data model that we have proposed does not currently include elements for privacy controls, but absolutely, you know, that would be an area which could certainly be explored and proposed for further work. The intent of the model that we put forth here is that it doesn't have to be complete. It should be an evolving data model to the extent that as new elements are needed, you add a definition and it gets added to the data model, and then profiles can then make use of that. So this would expressly be an area that the data model would need to be enhanced and extended. So thank you.
Thanks, Jim. Just looking at the chat, Julie Hammer here. Looking at the chat, and I see there are no hands raised. Can I just ask, before we move on, whether there are any further questions for Jim? And if not, we'll move on to see if there's any specific feedback that anyone on the call would like to provide now. Any further questions? I don't see any hands raised or anyone typing in the chat room. So we'll move on to our last item on the agenda, which is talking about our own response to the ESSEC. I would just point out that this is not a normal comment on a draft report, as we would often do in our response. This is a specific request from the ESSEC for feedback on questions that they have posed in their report. So I've already noted two items to include in our feedback, one regarding, which is a general comment regarding translation of reports into other languages, but the other specific comment and feedback is to include elements for privacy controls in the data model. Is there any further feedback that anyone would like to provide now, which I will include in our response? If not, the other opportunity for feedback is to add comments to the policy development page, which I will then incorporate into feedback. So anything now that anyone would like to comment on? I see Avery, Julie Hammer, I see Avery has noted in the chat room, until when is comment and URL, please? I'll ask one of the staff to provide the URL. I don't think we've put a time limit on the comment at this stage, but there is no specific time limit in which we have to provide comment, but I suggest that we allow a further, say, 3 weeks from today. I wonder if any of the staff would like to make any suggestions in that regard, whether that's an appropriate timescale. Gisela, Heidi, or Matt, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you please repeat the question?
Matt, what would be an appropriate time period to allow the community to provide comments back on the policy development page on this topic?
I'll check the page right now to tell you when the call for comments closes. One moment, please.
Just a point on that, Matt, Julie Hammer here. That was an arbitrary date that we put on it. There is no specific time limit, as would normally be the case on comments. We actually put that date there.
Correct. And the current date listed is the 31st of July, which... Mm. Is a bit longer than most comment periods, but it does fall within the appropriate time frame.
Mm-hmm. Does community think that is sufficient time for feedback to be provided?
Cheryl, hey, Julie.
Yes, Cheryl, thank you.
Thank you, Cheryl Langdonor, for the transcript record. My provisional answer there is yes, but there's an overrider on that answer, and that is because we have had the question of what languages this particular report is in, and that did come from the French-speaking community, I would suggest that a date like July 31 is appropriate, providing there is no community request or requirement for other languages, and particularly the ones we always work in, which are Spanish and French. If there is a community desire to have French and Spanish as well, then obviously we have to have a 14 to 21 days after that is made available. Thanks.
Julie Hammer here. Thanks, Cheryl. That's an excellent point. I might just ask Jim whether that, if we elongate our timescale to provide that feedback to account for producing translations, is that going to be a problem in progressing this work forward?
So this is Jim. Let me defer that question to Julie Hammer, Julie Hedlund. I believe that part of the response is we don't really control the translations. I mean, we ask for them. They happen when they happen. There's no deadline for them. So I suspect that that would be an issue. But let me let Julie respond based on her experience. She normally handles these things for us. Thank you.
Yes, this is Julie Hedlund for the transcript. The translation, there are really two factors. Make a request for translation. We don't actually own our own translation budget, so there are budgetary and cost considerations, and various approvals would need to be obtained in order to get translations. And of course, it would depend on how many different languages we were translating into, and also to keep in mind that very technical documents. And this one is somewhat technical, are difficult to translate and can tend to take longer than sort of a non-technical document, particularly if there are, you know, various diagrams and other aspects to it. So I don't have an answer for you, unfortunately, as far as how long it would take, because there is also then the factor of however many items are out for translation. For instance, I imagine there's a fair amount of translating that has followed the Prague meeting. I don't know if that's all complete, but our requests would go into sort of a queue of requests, I imagine, unless we could ask for it to be expedited in some way. And again, that's not a decision I could make. I would have to work with our translation services people, that is assuming that we got approval for the translations.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Julie. Julie Hammer here. I see Olivier has his hand raised. Olivier?
Thanks very much, Julie. It's Olivier Crépin-Leblanc for the transcript. Now that we have Julie Hedlund and also Jim Galvin with us, perhaps can we just turn the tables around, actually, and ask, because the July 31st date was an arbitrary date, which we just chose as being a reasonable date by which we could have our comments in. But perhaps should we ask Julie and Jim, when would it be most beneficial for the ESSAC to receive our comments by? What is the latest time that this would be okay for them? Because then we can work out backwards, and we're setting ourselves July 31st. It might be that the ESSAC needs those comments by the 1st of October, in which case we don't really have a problem with regards to translation and all this.
Thank you, Olivia. Yes, that's a good question, Jim.
So I think I'm going to defer to Julie again. I mean, you know, again, with the translations, the issue we have is we really don't control that schedule at all, and it would be problematic to even suggest or try to control it. There are just too many variables that we don't have any control over. As far as when we need the comments, I would always respond as soon as possible, but Julie may have a better handle on a date, and I'll defer to her to speak to that.
So this is Julie Hedlund. Unlike an ICANN comment period within a public forum, we in the ESSAC don't you know, generally set a specific deadline for comments. I think I would agree with Jim that sooner is always better than later. But if the ALAC's ability to comment is driven by how quickly we could get translations, if that's the driving force, then I would be hesitant to be able to give you a date of when we would need to hear back from you if the predicating factor is that there first need to be translations to be made.
Julie Hammer here. Olivia, you still have your hand up. Do you want to add something?
Thank you, Julie. It's Olivier. Let me be provocative then. Shall we send our statement in on the 1st of September? Will that be taken into account by the ESAC?
So this is Jim. I think the right answer is if you want 2 weeks or 4 weeks, just tell us and tell us that you're going to provide us comments by a certain date, and we'll probably accommodate that. As Julie was saying, we're not driven by the same kinds of deadlines, so we have control of our deadlines, and as long as we know you're doing something and you want to do something, we'll do our best to accommodate that. And in this particular case, I really don't see any issues with September 1st, but let me leave the final word with Julie.
And so this is Julie Headland. No, I don't think that would be an issue. We are still engaging the GNSO and the CCNSO for comments. We have not given them a particular deadline, and I have not heard yet from them when those communities might provide comments, if indeed they do plan to comment. So we are still in a process of engagement, and I think that speaks to allowing you the time that you need to be able to comment and for us to be able to work with ICANN staff to get some translations accomplished as well.
Thank you, Julie. Olivier, you wish to add something? No. Okay. I wonder if, as a result of this webinar, which we've past the top of the hour, so we should probably try to wrap up very soon. We have, I believe, specific requests for translations to French and Spanish. I wonder if I could ask Julie Headland if she needs anything more formal from the ALAC to put in requests for those translations. Do we need to put in a written request to ESAC on that straight away, Julie, or would you be willing to take that as an action from this webinar?
It actually would be helpful for me if one of the ALAC staff could send me an email making the request, because I will have to get for the translations, and that will help me to get the appropriate approvals, I think.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Julie. So I would ask ALAC staff if they would please, and I see Heidi has already put in the chat room that she's happy to do that. Thank you, Heidi. So I think we probably need to try and wrap up this webinar now. Can I make a final request if anyone has any further comment or question before we close?
Julie, Cheryl here.
Cheryl, yeah.
Thank you. It's actually to the previous point. Could I strongly encourage Olivier to have the ALAC staff, the at-large staff, do that email to Julie Headland, absolutely, but as a request from this meeting and the community at this meeting, copy it across to language services so that they know this is something that the ALAC is putting a considerable amount of pressure on. That might help you, Julie Headland, just a little bit in terms of any possible fast-tracking of things, because we can be a real nuisance to language services, so it might help for them to know that, A, this is coming, and, B, where it's coming from.
This is Julie Hedlund. Thanks for that, Cheryl. I think that is very helpful because anyway, thanks. I'll just stop there.
Thank you, Cheryl, and thank you, Julie. Anything further? This is Julie Hammer. Okay, well, I think it's been a really excellent opportunity for the community to get across this topic, and I'd like to express on everyone's behalf sincere thanks to Jim Galvin for the excellent presentation and for giving his time to do this. And I would ask everyone, if they have any further comments, to please add them to the policy development page where we have posted the report and also posted a little scene setter document pointing everyone to the sorts of issues that the ESSAC is seeking feedback on. Last call for any comments or questions or anything from staff. Okay, well, in that case, I'll ask for the recording to be completed and bid everyone good morning and thank you for your participation.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye.
Thank you. This is Jim. It's been a pleasure. Bye.
Thank you.